Chapter 9.
When there's a gun pointed at you, you've got two options. Either you move fast and unexpectedly and hope that you get lucky, or you freeze and try to talk your way clear. Given that I had really limited room in which to attempt to dodge or run, I went with option B. I held still. "I don't suppose," I asked hopefully, "that this is the full military model?"
"It has individually heated seats and a 6-disc CD changer," Thomas said. I scowled. "Uh-huh. Those are way cooler than silly features like armor and bulletproof glass." "Hey," Thomas said, "it's not my fault that you have special needs."
"Harry," said the man with the shotgun, "hold up your right hand, please."
I arched an eyebrow at that. Typically, the vocabulary of thugs holding guns to your head ran a little light on courtesy phrases like please.
"You want me to kill him?"
Thomas murmured, barely audible. I twitched my head in a tiny negative motion. Then I lifted up my right hand, fingers spread.
"Turn it around," said the man outside. "Let me see the inside of your wrist."
I did.
"Oh, thank God," breathed the voice.
I'd finally placed it. I turned my head to one side and said through the glass, "Hey there, Fix. Is that a shotgun you're holding to my head, or are you just glad to see me?" Fix was a young, slender man of medium height. His hair was silver white and very fine, and though no one would ever accuse him of beauty, there was a confidence and surety in his plain features that gave them a certain appeal. He was a far cry from the nervous, scrawny kid I'd met several years ago. He wore jeans and a green silk shirt, nothing more. He obviously should have been freezing, and he just as obviously wasn't. The thickly falling snowflakes weren't striking him. Every single one seemed to find its way to the ground around him somehow. He held a pump-action shotgun with a long barrel against his shoulder and wore a sword on a belt at his hip.
"Harry," he said, his voice steady.
His tone wasn't hostile.
"Can we have a polite talk?"
"We probably could have," I said, "if you hadn't started off by pointing a gun at my head."
"A necessary precaution," he said. "I needed to be sure you hadn't taken Mab's offer."
"And become the new Winter Knight?" I asked. "You could have asked me, Fix."
"If you'd become Mab's creature," Fix said, "you would have lied. It would have changed you, made you an extension of her will. I couldn't trust you."
"You're the Summer Knight," I replied, "so I can't help but wonder if that wouldn't make you just as controlled and untrustworthy. Summer's not at all happy with me right now, apparently. Maybe you're just an extension of Summer's will." Fix stared at me down the barrel of the shotgun, and then he lowered it abruptly and said,
"Touché."
Thomas produced from nowhere a semi-automatic pistol scaled to fit his truck and had it trained on Fix's head before the other man had finished speaking the second syllable of a word. Fix's eyes widened.
"Holy crap."
I sighed and took the gun gently from Thomas's grip. "Now, now, let's not give him the wrong idea about the nature of this conversation." Fix let out a slow breath.
"Thank you, Harry, I
pointed the gun at Fix's head, and he froze with his mouth partly open. "Lose the shotgun," I told him. I made no effort to sound friendly. His mouth closed, and his lips pressed into a thin line, but he obeyed. "Step back," I said. He did it.